Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, y'all. This is the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have Mark Sebastian on the podcast, who is a very funny, gorgeous, nerdy queen, and I'm not the only one who thinks so. His over 2 million TikTok followers agree, and in this interview, you'll hear the fruity way I discovered Mark and all about his big gay adventures. Enjoy. Mark Sebastian, I had no doubt that you would look gorgeous for this interviewing, but I'm really thrilled to see you brought a cup with you that needs an introduction. Mark, give me the backstory on this gorgeous, what do we call her?
It's a Choco Lab. It's a kettle. it's a water bottle slash kettle.
Can I tell you, it looks the head of it looks like a douche with a handle.
And that's exactly why I got it. And it's multi-purpose, you know? It does usually have like a little cap. Ow. But it's really cute. I got it off of TikTok Shop. One of like, I don't know, probably like 5 purchases that I've made off TikTok Shop that like I use pretty often.
What's that percentage out of all the things you've purchased on TikTok Shop? What's that percentage of things you actually use?
I'm going to say like 20% of the things that like I use regularly. And then for things like I use intermittently, like maybe like 35.
So you're actually purchasing things that you are not throwing away within 5 days.
Absolutely. Yes. But I am also purchasing things that I am giving away to people. Well, I mean, mainly because I review a lot of this stuff and it's not always good.
Well, that's like, I feel like we're living in an interesting time, especially for people susceptible to marketing. I am married to a human who really is just in the grips of big marketing, and an Instagram ad. Really? I see a lot of packages at my door, Mark. A lot of packages.
An Instagram ad goes far. Targeted marketing.
There, it really is. Do you remember there was an era where there was like a gorgeous man with like a fat ass and they were showing the same like kind of ugly shorts on your Instagram story, like at like sponsored, and then all of a sudden you would go to a gay bar and see 15 men in the same printed shorts. I feel like we're in an era where marketing is honing in more and more specifically to people susceptible to clicking purchase on their phone device.
And I agree with that. And also I'm on one half, I'm like, absolutely, you should buy things off TikTok Shop and you should use my reviews to buy so. But I'm also like, the consumerism of the world in which we live is not great. Although I will say that like I have a lot of animosity towards Ortu, which is the brand that you are referring to that makes those printed shorts. And I would say some of the most hideous clothing I've ever seen gay men wear. And it's almost like I need them to be stopped because it's offensive for sort of everyone who has to look at it. And I don't, and listen, let everyone wear what they want until we get to Ortu. And then I'm like, no, I don't think that we should let everyone wear what they want. And I think that there should be laws. There should be the fashion police. I think that we should.
I feel that way about people can do whatever they want to their body, except if you shave your bush, jail for life.
Oh, that's a really interesting observation and desire. I mean, I have encountered a lot more clean shaven individuals recently that I've been like, huh.
Like downtown.
I'm of the sort of, I feel like if you really want to do, if it looks better, it looks better, but it rarely does. But I'm okay with people experimenting to see what goes on.
Yeah, I shudder to think of a world that anybody looks better, Bald Eagle. But listen, I know there are people who do, and that's affirming to them. But I'm also speaking, like, we all speak from a place of trauma. And my trauma is, you know, I was so embarrassed to have body hair. And so now I see it as my mission to preserve the bush around the globe. I find it to be my duty, if you will.
And that's what you're running on, is preserve the bush.
Bush 2028. Thank you. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's just a different kind of bush.
Right. Without the...
We've had George W.
And now we have
the bush.
The bush 2028. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you, Mark, how I became a fan of yours?
Please. That's incredible to hear.
So I'm sitting in a chair at a barbershop minding my business. Okay. The girly who cuts my hair, her name is Angela. She is an icon. She is a legend. We talk about therapy every single session. And she goes, "Do you follow Mark Sebastian?" And I say, tell me more. I pull up Mark Sebastian's TikTok. I see a mustache. I see funny content. And the next thing we know, I'm sitting in front of your face interviewing you on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. So shout out to Angela.
Thank you, Angela. Where's Angela work at?
Floyd's Barbershop, baby.
Is that New York? You're in New York, yeah?
Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. I'm in LA. I feel like we should have done this, like, sort of at a, I don't know, an Intelligista coffee. Intelligista? Whatever. Some, like, fun little fashion coffee shop.
I know. My dumb ass finds it easier to record remotely. However, one day we're going to either do a recording at a gorgeous, whatever that shop you said it was, or we're just going to find ourselves being at a gay bar saying, "Oh my God, Mark, look at us now."
And I would love it. I think that we should do it at a flower shop. I think flower shops are really underrated as far as, like, podcast backgrounds go. And I think that that's something that should be utilized.
And we're not talking about it enough, Mark. We're really not talking about the floral podcasting synergy.
And that's why I'm here today. What I wanted to talk about is how I think we should be utilizing floral spaces in Los Angeles more.
Well, Mark Sebastian, is it annoying when I call you by your full name?
No, everyone does now. Even my, like, best friends. And I'm like, sure. I have two first names, which is really a crazy thing. Sebastian being not my last name.
Oh my God, controversial.
Yeah, but my name is, like, very pretentious and has, like, an annoying story behind it that, like, no one ever believes anyway. So.
Well, that was a gorgeous tee up. Mark, what's the story?
I'm Mark Sebastian because I was born November 1st. My grandfather was born November 1st. His father born November 1st. They were all named Sebastian. My mom didn't like the name Sebastian. So in order to compromise with my grandmother, she named me Mark Sebastian, two first names. So now I'm Mark Sebastian, but all of my like siblings have two first names because she hated the last name Faella, which is my actual last name.
Is that giving my Italiano? Legal.
I am Italian. I'm Italian and Irish. I grew up on Long Island. I mean, how much more cliche could I get? I could be a cop. And then
you really could. But that means that, yeah, you know many Jews, right? Long Island?
So many. That, like, when I heard how small the Jewish population was in America, I was like, I know all of them. That's actually so crazy because what are you talking about? Because there's only 5 million Jews in America? No?
Girl, all I know is it's like in the world, it's like 0.02%. And yet I as well know for many obvious reasons, but many a Jew. Have you ever dated a Jewess?
Absolutely.
Oh, I love
many.
Oh my God. So you do like Bush. You know, there's so many questions I have for you, of course, about your history, but I didn't mean to gloss over the fact that you were born on November 1st, as was your grandfather, as was your grandfather's father. Do you think there's, like, a witch in your lineage that is doing some sort of underground work to connect you all in some magical way?
Fingers crossed. She's doing really well on Etsy right now.
Yeah.
The big sort of renaissance of Etsy witches. November 1st is All Saints Day, which a medium once told me means that I'm more susceptible to paranormal experiences. And I find that to be true, actually.
Wow. I love to connect to the other side. And I'm not just saying that. I, like, there's something about a medium. I mean, Teresa Caputo, not to, like, evoke her name so early.
Famously a Long Island medium.
When she first was...
I'm more of a Long Island small, but...
Hey, and we are not size queens here. The Teresa Caputo, when she first went on air, as it were, I was so into her being at a fucking, like, sandwich shop and going, did your sister pass? There was something about her that was just, I love how a medium can actually, I believe in it is what I'm saying. I believe in like connecting with the other side. I'm a therapy girly. I don't like carry crystals, but like if you were to tell me it's going to cure something, that placebo will work for me.
You'd buy it.
Yeah. And you know what I would also buy into is the gay ass podcast question that I should be asking you, Mark Sebastian. So let's get into the actual podcast question, which is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
There's so many. I did think about this prior to coming on here. I have a couple answers. Is that decent and okay?
By all means.
Okay, perfect. I think the first one that I was convinced, like I actually growing up between the ages of like 8 and 14 until I like sort of readily accepted that I actually was gay, I was convinced that it was my sister who kept calling me a faggot, like and kept making fun of me gay. I was convinced that it was my sister, all the people in school that made me gay. I was like, they said it, so now I think that I'm gay and therefore I am gay, until I realized that no, it's just like in a shocking twist of events, I actually was gay.
So chicken or the egg, really?
Mm-hmm. It really was the chicken or the egg. And all of my dolls really wished I was an egg. And honestly, they're lucky I'm not.
Well, your dolls were also calling you faggot, too. Before we get into the second reason, we both need to align on the fact that we come from families who we love dearly and also had siblings who gay bashed. I mean, it very much, although it's sort of rare for a sister, I feel like I have three brothers, which kind of tracks, but what do you think it was coming from your sister? Why do you think, did she learn it from the usually girls are not calling the boys fag.
I think a symptom of our environment. Like, yeah. Again, I grew up in conservative Long Island. Long Island has never gone blue, I don't think. It is Trump country. I grew up around cops and the kids of cops. You were either a cop, Jewish or Italian in Long Island. Sometimes you could be all three if you got lucky, if you were the child of how that would have happened. But I don't think that she was ever homophobic. I think it was more of a like a defense mechanism.
Oh, of course. Defend.
Yeah. But my brother sort of famously homophobic. I don't really talk to my family much, mainly because I never really was a big family person. I never felt like I was super connected to this idea of being forced to love these people who were so strongly against who I was. So I was like, I'm okay. I'm good.
Does that mean that when you eventually did come out, was the reaction something that did not feel as good as you might have wanted it to?
No, in actuality, it was more of like, I came out and it was like, I mean, I came out and then my mom was like, okay, but you're not going to start wearing women's clothes, right? And okay, but you're not going to start talking like a faggot, right? Like there was, okay, you could be gay, but you could be gay within these parameters of what I think is socially acceptable.
Yeah.
And then once I was not the gay that she could go like shopping with and be like her sort of like gay son, even though I was in fashion for 10 years, I just never wanted to be like tokenized as this gay fashion boy. I refused to be, even though I was fucking incredible at it. And all of my other friends were benefiting off of me going to Forever 21 with them at the Smith Haven Mall and getting down.
Shout out.
And I don't even know if Smith Haven Mall is still open. Forever 21, RIP.
Yeah, knowing sort of what's been happening historically to malls, I'm not going to put any money on Smith Haven Mall being...
Century City Mall, incredible. Groundbreaking.
Shout out.
I fucking love Century City Mall. I could live there. It's so fun. And they have a caviar stand. Anyway, I digress. I guess I just sort of rejected being tokenized and being given conditions, you know, it wasn't unconditional acceptance. It was, you have to be this way or I can't figure out a way to love you.
Do you know what? It really hits me hard because I also came from a place that stems from ignorance, in the sense of the word, the ignorance is not like they are ignorant because they have decided to be ignorant. They are responding to the environment around them, as you're talking about, the cops, the Trumpiness of it all. Mine was very much like there were no out people growing up in the Midwest. And so my brothers, of course, started to either call me gay or whatever it was because of what they had heard. But that's why, not to get too like soapboxy after school spesh, but that's why the whole chosen family thing is so important for us girlinas. And that's why I think you and I both living in LA and living our like big gay lives is taking care of the conditions we were given and saying, fuck you, to like, I will be a fashion girly if I so choose.
And I did choose, and then I sort of went against. My question is, did your older brothers or brothers defend you in school ever? Or were they, because for me, my brothers were the ones making fun of me. My brother was the one like sort of throwing the jabs. And I was like, I feel like you're supposed to be defending me, frankly.
Well, it's very funny you asked this, Mark, because the poor listeners have heard me bring up my goddamn solo show too many times. And solo shows get a bad rap because
they
should.
Bring it up more.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark Sebastian. I'm in the midst of like doing it for the first time in my life, and it's been something I've been trying to do. So I just did it literally twice in the past week here in LA. I'm doing it in New York July 17th, and I'm going to take it to a few cities. And in the show, I literally talk about how the biggest bully that I had in school was my own twin brother. And so it really, I relate to this. Yeah, twin. So I did the show last night and I went out to Akbar after.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And after the show, I like found myself bringing up another story about one of my brothers bullying me. And I thought the reaction was going to be like, oh my God, crazy. But the reaction was like, oh, that's really sad.
That's and the worst.
When you know how you like work through your trauma, but you forget that other people haven't heard it before. And so it's like, or it's like the thing where people are like, my family used to do this crazy thing. Isn't it nuts? Then everybody gets quiet because you realize it's like either like a bad A word, either abuse or assault or something like that we think is fine. But yeah, no, my brothers, I have three brothers. One of my younger brother was always like mostly innocent. I was probably not the nicest to him at times, but it was my twin and my older brother who were sort of not the best as kids. They really have grown up to be like mensches, but it really, yeah, not a good
I mean, literally, he could have, you could have eaten him in the womb, and he honestly should have thanked you for that.
I partly did because I'm 6 foot two, he's 5 foot four.
Wait.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the plot thickens, Mark Sebastian. Can I ask what was the second reason that made you gay?
Oh, sure. I would say the second reason that made me gay would have to be the Animal Planet, which is a really strange one to come to the conclusion of. Mm-hmm. But I think that when I was a kid, much like Vinny, who you've had on this show, who I love and is like one of the funniest people I've ever met, like, and he makes humor for me directly. Like, I am, my sort of autism is like, I can identify any animal if you show me a photo of it, much like he can. And I grew up like loving animals. Like my whole thing growing up, I was obsessed with dinosaurs. I was obsessed with animals, anything like earth science. It was my thing. I didn't go into fashion until later on, when I found it was more socially acceptable for a gay man to like want to be in fashion than it was to like, for a gay man to want to be a zoologist, or it's like a lot of trauma. Anyway, but when I found out about the Animal Planet, I remember that my cousin Jana, I was like telling her all about the documentaries I was renting on VHSs and whatever. And she was like, you know, there's an entire channel called Animal Planet that you can watch on TV. And I was like, really? And then once I started watching Animal Planet and seeing how passionate other people were about animals and seeing myself relate to someone else, like with a niche interest like that. There was also a show called Zoo Venture, which is basically, it was like animal trivia. And if you won, you got to be a zookeeper for a day at the San Diego Zoo. Yeah, the San Diego Zoo. And I used to sleep with Zoopedias underneath my pillow. Like I was studying religiously to get on the show. I was not of age to be able to get on the show, but it was like my dream to go on Zoo Venture, win Zoo Venture, become a zookeeper for a day. But then once I started to realize that, like these other niche interests that I had, i.e. men, could also like, I was like, maybe there's other people who also feel that way. And then I was like, maybe there's a channel for that. And in fact, there was, it was Logo. And that's really when I feel like I started to discover queerness and a sense of community and other people who related to me. I know that's like less of a funny answer, more of a, an earnest answer, but
I love an earnest answer. I really do, Mark.
Animals,
I
mean, and Steve Irwin, who I was inconsolable. When Steve Irwin passed away, I know exactly where I was. I know what I was wearing. I was inconsolable. He was my childhood hero. Like, truly, it was Steve Irwin until it was Cher. You know what I mean? And then, like, I was...
Well, you contain multitudes, Mark. I mean, it's like, there's so much to that answer that really hits me. And I think that the pop culture of it all with the Animal Planet, I think there's two networks that young gay kids should be thinking, Animal Planet and the Food Network. Because I think that we are able to watch the Animal Planet or the Food Network, and these people or animals are taking out judgment calls on who you are inside, and it's just seeing us for the passions that we have. My journalistic question is, do you like animals so much because they can't judge you? Is it because there are tons of fags in the jungle? What do you think about the animal love? Is it purely like autistic fixations? I mean, like, what is it?
There's definitely an autistic fixation in there, like a hyper fixation. I really love animals because for me, I really can't wrap my head around the fact that we live on Earth with these like insane creatures. Like, they're like living Pokemon, and we get to see them at up close sometimes. Like, we're making them endangered. Like, these people don't understand the importance that animals have on our environment. I also got into a fight with a gay man the other day about calling something an invasive species, and he was like, "Is anything really invasive?" And I was like, "Well, yes. Things can."
Scientifically speaking.
Uh-huh. I've always been really fascinated with how beautiful animals are and how wild they are and how they live in a system that has like no cares besides us. Like, they struggle, and it's hard, I'm sure, to be like, I don't know, a bat-eared fox in the Kalahari Desert and trying to like make kills, but they don't have the same societal pressures. So maybe there is a sense of longing and desire to not have that same pressure on me.
Well, it makes sense why you have done these videos called A Great American Gay Side Quest, where you're like fully sort of taking yourself out of your home environment, traveling, and then walking your audience through it. The TikTok of it all, I really am inspired by you because you do such a good job of like creating content that is genuinely from your personality. It's so not put on, but it's also connects with an audience that is so specific. Like you were saying, how you were sort of feeling that you weren't allowed to be super into animals, or that it was more socially acceptable as a gay person to be into fashion. You had a video on your TikTok where you were, of course, enjoying your love of fossils, and God bless, and you were in Denver and you left a bunch of really cool rocks under a little, there they are. There she is.
I
here she is
working
world.
On them before.
There's this video where you found a bunch of cool rocks and you leave them in a specific spot in Denver while you were on this trip. And then people who follow you went and grabbed some of the rocks that you had left them. Like, that's sort of a beautiful modern age thing.
They grabbed some of the rocks, but they also left some for other people to be able to get too, which I was like, that's so sweet. And then they ran into each other while they were there. And like, and then people started to bring rocks to that place to put there because they were like, oh, well, I want to trade rock. It's really sweet. And I think that, I mean, thank you for your compliments about my content. I know that I sort of cater to a more niche audience because my content is not easily described as like one niche, really. It's weird. Like, I have so many different niches, but I think that the whole point of being good at content creation is for the niche to be you, and for people to come and see how you're reacting to different things. At least that's like what I've 100% found to be good with me. But yeah, A Great American Gay Side Quest is an amazing example of something that like, it was just an entire list of things that I had really wanted to do since I was a kid. Opal mining, like hunting for sapphires, going to the Stanley Hotel. I'm obsessed with horror. I have always been, as every queer kid is. Mm. And getting to, I only learned how to drive last year because I'm from New York. So I moved to LA 2.5 years ago, and all of my friends sort of banded together to teach me how to drive, which I was like, that is so sweet, guys. That's so nice. And then they were like, well, that way you can always be the designated driver because I'm sober.
Right.
And I was like, that's actually really fucked up because now I don't want to be the designated driver.
That's the most LA story I've ever heard.
It just seems really like fucked up that you guys would. I thought you guys were just being sweet.
Yeah.
I no did fail altruism my first road here. Test. No. But everyone cool fails their first road test. I don't think it's an issue.
Oh, you failed your first one?
Yeah.
No, that's completely okay. I failed when I was trying to get my learner's permit.
The written test.
My twin brother and I had the awful idea to take it sitting next to each other. And guess who passed? Him. Guess who did not? Me. We then go to school, walk in the door. How'd it go? All the friends waiting. My fucking brother walks in, gets lifted above their shoulders, and then I just go, you know what, to the theater classroom. But driving does bring up, some of my first fights with my husband and when we moved to LA 3.5 years ago were purely about driving. Purely wow. about How driving. Come? Because our styles are so different. He thinks I'm a quote unquote bad driver. I think he drives like a quote unquote grandma. And it's just like, I am more of a sort of a extroverted driver. He is more of an introverted driver, which is a surprise to no one. But I think like we lived in New York together for 8 years before living in LA. And so we had never really driven regularly together.
Why would you need to?
Yeah. So it's like the same New York to LA thing. And so when we moved here, it was like it was always after we went to like a party or a friend's place or going out, and we were just like, you know, exhausted or whatever. And it would just like get into like, I mean, truly, we talked about it in couples therapy, no joke. But like, to our credit, it's like we have figured it out now. We're like, we're good now.
The car was like your therapy session.
I guess. But you at least
conduit.
You learned how to drive, and then you actually like were going on these really cool road trips. You actually went to the Sasquatch Museum, which I found to be very sort of on the nose for gay people because we love a fantasy figure that also is covered in body hair, not to bring up a theme. Are you doing these travels by yourself? And second question, I love the BTS of content creation. Are you shooting just the whole time and then editing after, or are you editing as you go?
First things first, Bigfoot truther here. I don't want anyone to get too comfortable on this episode without knowing that I fully believe, I don't believe in many Bigfoot. I believe in one family of big feet. Okay. And I think that there could be, and everyone's like, well, then where are they dying? I don't know. Maybe they're buried, they're dead. Like, and maybe that's why we can't find Bigfoot bodies. Who knows? Anyway. I do tend to take those trips, like when they're like sort of content trips, I take them alone. Like the first time I ever drove by myself post getting my license was I landed in Iceland and I drove to go see the puffins. There's an island off the coast of Iceland. And it was I wanted to see puffins since I was a kid. And the first time I ever drove by myself was in a car to go see puffins. And I did that alone because I do really want to encourage people to travel alone. It's my favorite thing in the entire world. Like, I am very much a people person, and I love to be around my friends. But when there are certain things like the content, and this goes into sort of the BTS, there are shots that I have to make sure that I get that I don't feel like would be enjoyable for other people to watch. And I certainly don't want to be like into a mic in front of my friends. Not that I am embarrassed by any means. You have to get over that as a content creator. It's like half the battle of like talking to a camera in public, which a lot of people can't. That's understandable. But yeah, I mean, the content trips I'm doing solo, and I'm shooting everything on my phone, or I got a pair of Ray-Ban Metas, shout out.
I saw that, did a full like bonus episode showing us the gorgeous drives.
They were really cool. Like they're just thick glasses, and like I got them with lenses put in them, like my actual glasses, so that I could drive with them. But filming with the phone, filming with the glasses, and editing that trip was only 9 days long. However, I got like 30 pieces of content out of it, and I was having so much trouble editing and then posting as soon as I was doing it because I was exhausted from like, I don't know, searching for sapphires in like in the Montana countryside for 8 hours. So, and also for like safety concerns, I didn't want to post all the places because the setup of it was I would go do a side quest and then I would show where I was staying that night. So I'd be staying in like these insane Airbnbs or these like Mormon sex hotels. And showcasing all these, really crazy ones too.
Mormon like sex hotels?
Yeah, they're called the Anniversary Inn because they're in Utah. Because
did you fuck a Mormon in the hotel?
No, and that's something that I should take up with my management, really.
I think you should too. I think Select needs to hear. Have I ever hooked up with a Mormon?
I've definitely hooked up. The one who got away is a Mormon, or an ex-Mormon rather. I know.
I do understand, though, because I feel like, I mean, every ex-Mormon I meet has a certain je ne sais quoi, you know, it's maybe like...
Or they're autistic.
Or that. Maybe that's the je ne sais quoi-tistic. That's the name of your one-man show, je ne sais quoi-tism.
Wow, that's really beautiful. That you can, I can make merch off that. I don't know if you've been to... Have you seen the signs of the person who... it's like three cults walk into a bar?
Yes, I have seen those signs.
Have you seen the show?
No, but I did my show at the same theater, Lyric Hyperion.
And, you know, and listen, I'm happy for anyone to do shows. And I really do. I'm really excited. My ex-boyfriend took me to the show because his like two straight friends were going because they had seen all these signs. And I was like, but they were like earnest and like, they were like genuinely like, wow, this show sounds cool. Instead of being like, I'm seeing all these signs, I want to go see what the fuck this show is about. They were like, I want to hear about these cults. It was such an interesting show because it is a comedian who's writing it. The tone of the show is wild. Like he's just going into the next, into the next, into the next. He was also like, and then at one point he brings out one of those like whistles, like that, what are they called? Where they, yeah, he brings out one of those. And I was like, what the fuck is that? Also, merch opportunity. Why were you not selling those after the show? It just feels like that's what you should have been doing.
You are really like a beautiful gay capitalist. And
I want to let you know right now, I'm a complete and total sellout. I do everything for the money. Like that is, I want to get to a point where I buy a house that has a backyard so I can get like 15 different kinds of tortoises that I can just like grow old with.
So that's what we're manifesting is a tortoise.
Without well, a doubt.
The tortoises will outlive you. I think you know that, yes?
I mean, I hope so. I hope that in my estate collection is my vast collection of tiny pointless items and then my tortoises who I think, but then again, there's a lot of things I want to happen for my estate sale. It's like, and I was also just talking about my funeral the other day. My ideal funeral is like, everyone goes, I tell everyone there's going to be a performance. Like you guys have to get there. I'm imagining that like I'm able to tell people this stuff. There's going to be performance at say noon. So everyone has to be there by noon. They go, everyone's in the room by noon. The doors close. You know, the lights go down. Nothing happens for like 20 minutes. Everyone's like, what's going on? Until one person stands up and goes, I think he made his funeral an escape room. And then someone's like, wait, what? And then my funeral becomes an escape room. And then from that moment, no performance. The performance is you guys have to get out of the room. It's my sort of last fuck you to my friends who will never go to escape rooms with me. Is now you have to escape my funeral.
Okay, this is a genius idea for anybody. Everybody should plan their funeral and make their friends do the things that they never would do while you were alive. I guess mine would be... No, that's too nice. I would say just getting ice cream because none of my friends. I know one of my friends usually will go with me. But after any event, I'll say, you know what I want to do?
Go get ice cream.
Their eyes will roll. Get ice cream. But that's too nice. I feel like an escape room is incidentally hard to escape from by design. And I think an escape room funeral is really gorgeous. I thought you were going to say that like you want like Kim Petras to perform, but this is even better.
No. It's my funeral. I would not want anyone performing other than like that. I feel like the focus should be on me. I also don't particularly want to be buried. I want to be cremated. Then I want to have my ashes pressed into life diamonds in which I get to choose who wears me. You know?
Genius.
And it
genius.
Comes with and it comes with rules. Like you can't make me, you can't mix metals. Like it can only be worn with this.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Well, look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Speaking of the, like, the branding of it all, the capitalism of it all, can we get into, like, you, I'm not someone who is a smart businesswoman. Like, this podcast has taken about 42 years to make a single dollar. However, she's finally, you know, doing her thing.
Profitable? Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's fucking right.
God bless. However, you have a history of being a model. You went to Parsons School of Design, but now you are this very successful content creator. When did you become full-time in just content creation? Like, when did you realize, oh, I can completely burst through the TikTok algo and make mucho bucos?
I started making content in 2020, much like a lot of other, like, TikTokers, because when I was, modeling, I modeled full-time from, like, 2012 to, like, 2018. And then I was doing a lot of styling after that. So, like, these two things that I was doing, which was modeling and styling during the pandemic, were not able to happen. And I was like, okay, well, if I can't do these other things, and I had already really wanted to go move more into a TV space, and at that time I was taking screenwriting classes, which I still would love to go in. I, you know, was developing a show in 2020 with Paper Magazine, which was really cool. And it all sort of led me into, like, maybe I should test some of these, like, things out, like, that I'm talking about. And then the first video that hit was, I'd written a scene in one of the episodes where someone went over to someone's house, got really angry at this person, and left, but they left with all the people, like, this person's remotes in their bag. So they just stole all their remotes. And so it, like, made this person so frustrated, because it's like, when you lose the remote, it's like, you would never think that someone would steal the remote. Like, so you would just be constantly searching for this remote that is just gone.
Dark.
And so I made a video basically being like, if you hate people, steal their remotes, and it blew up. And then I was like, oh, wait. And then I knew TikTok would be the sort of next moneymaker, and I knew that if I had gotten onto Instagram a little bit before the boom and was able to, like, create a platform there, a lot of people who did that were able to, like, monetize it very quickly. And again, it was all about the money for me. And I was like, okay, I need to figure out a way to survive 2020, 2021. And I was like, I was accruing debt, like, you know, owing my roommate's mom money because, like, I couldn't pay rent, until TikTok sort of really started to take off. And then I was lucky to be able to, like, you know, pay my bills. But full time, I would say I went 2022 was when I started to, like, make content and be able to make a living off of it, and, like, be comfortable and not have to, like, take on, like, sort of odd and end jobs, which I think a lot of, and this is no shade towards other influencers, I think that a lot of influencers take that for granted. Like, I have never had a real job, and it's, like, it's something that has caused me great stress in my life, but also immense amounts of joy, because I my brain doesn't work in a way that I could go do a 9-to-5. So
do
none
you mean
of
the
like
stress the, is the stress that comes from, like, lack of stability?
Gig work is so hard. Also, having to deal with all of the like invoicing before I had management, like to handle the, like, inboxes, things like that. It was just such a pain negotiating. Like, I'm so bad at negotiating because I'm like, oh, I like this company. Like, I'm down to do that, you know? And then that's where sort of, you know, Select and YouTube step in and go, no, you're not going to do that. And I'm like, right. Oh, okay.
No, can I ask 100%. You about, have you done any Substack stuff with your content? I just, I'm going to do, like, a bit of a plug, because I think Substack is in its, like, era of starting to, I think it's on its way up to becoming, like, someone joked that it's like OnlyFans for writers, but it's actually becoming a platform where you have the feed where you can actually look at people posting videos or just fun thoughts. And then it's actually like podcasts are doing full video there. There's stylists doing, like, cool lookbooks. There's people doing live videos. I mean, a person like you would do very well. And it's also, like, business-wise really smart, because I ended up getting, I don't even know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but the exciting news is that I started working with a great podcast agent, that set me up with the Substack crew, where I'm basically, I moved everyone over from Patreon for Gay Ass Podcast to Substack. And I did it because Substack is so much better about growing an actual audience. They're actually helping creators connect with other creators and then grow their audiences there. And then, of course, getting more people to pay for bonus content to help me. I'm like part-time still at this corporate job that I'm going to be able to leave hopefully soon, but Substack is going to be the reason why I can, because it's like a centralized place. Any of my like comedian friends or creator friends, I'm like really trying to like tell them that it's the way that it's built, it's obviously still growing, so working out some kinks, but it's actually like really been, I mean, this last week from when we're recording this, speaking of gorgeous autists, our guest producer Nathaniel is the guest in the bonus episode, and we have a very horny chat about a birthday hangout he had, and it's like full video on Substack, and it's just so cool. People can comment, and I'm just saying, like, you would absolutely slay on Substack, and it's just cool to see we're living in a time where creators can monetize their shit from an audience that really believes in them and connects with what they're doing, just like your audience on TikTok.
I mean, thank God that we live in that time. Like, I mean, I have never wanted my brain really does not work in a way in which I could sit in front of a computer and do like things that I didn't feel like were for me. Even when I was styling and things and doing like personal shopping and stuff, I just like was miserable doing it. But I feel really grateful that I get to monetize like my platform. But also, like, I'm always trying to get my friends to like monetize their platforms. I've stopped monetizing any of my hobbies because I'm like, this is like the things that I have for myself. But I try to get my friends on TikTok a lot because you can really make a living. You can make good money on TikTok. I mean, people are making tons of money doing TikTok shop, whether or not like they're getting brand deals. Like it's a really great platform.
How do you reckon with the TikTok shop of it all? Because some people have argued that TikTok shop has like ruined the algorithm because there are so many people in it. Yeah. So like I still think that TikTok brings me way more joy than it brings me agita, if you will. But does the TikTok shop of it all, like, does it make you enjoy your time less, either creating content or being on the platform?
I honestly, like, the amount of TikTok shop ads, yes, like that, like where it is every other ad. And like, I know that because I do a whole series called Viral Verdicts. I wear this like sort of founding fathers like Party City wig, and I test out these things. But the reason why I do it was because I was seeing so many reviews of these products that I thought, I was like, there's like, that thing sucks. And you guys are on here going, you need to buy this. Like, this is incredible. Like, you have to get, and I'm just like, so I do these TikTok shop, Viral Verdicts episodes, and I don't get to pick the items that I am reviewing because everyone else is, whatever item gets the most amount of likes is the next thing that I review, usually within like some parameters, if I can make sure I can get it, whether it's available, whatever.
Yeah.
And I made it that way so that it doesn't come across as like, as me just trying to like make a buck off of people, so that people can understand that like, you guys are the ones wanting me to review this. And I am always honest. Like I have called many product scams. I have told people not to buy shit, but there have been like cool products. One was not even a review. It was like something else, but there were, like great items, and that has become sort of like, I consider my whole TikTok as like a TV channel, and the Great American Gay Side Quest, and these sort of other little things that I have being like the series, like the original content, and then the Viral Verdicts, brand deals, things like that being the sort of commercials in between. But if I'm going to make commercials, I want to make sure that they're entertaining to watch. And
They say that Instagram is like you're curating your own magazine. And I feel like your TikTok is actually your TV network.
Yeah.
Where like you have your network, and then underneath it is the different shows with the commercials, how you support yourself.
Exactly. And I really think that episodic content is sort of what is going to be the next like boom on TikTok, which is like creating, which is why, making a Great American Gay Side Quest, but also I went on this disgusting cruise last year.
I saw that
viral. It was gross. Like, I literally hate cruises. Royal Caribbean like, welcome to your fucking
well,
tape.
Tell the listeners the actual BTS. This was a 9-month cruise that people were willfully taking. You were on it for 18 days. You were giving a very, like, you know, real honest BTS about how they were treating other influencers, how some of the other attendees on the cruise were a bit gnarly. Do you look back on that world cruise now with any, like, major takeaways, any regrets? Are you glad? I mean, obviously it was huge for your account, but does it feel like a nightmare that you're glad is over?
Absolutely. I felt like a nightmare. It was day three. And I was like, I'm stuck on a boat. There was a time where I did not touch land for 8 days. And I was like stuck on this boat with all these people. And because the cruise was going so viral and my videos about it and me being quite negative, but also very honest about what I was experiencing and how, like, there was weird shit that was going on this cruise. And I thought that I was going to go on there and have these, like, pinnacle members, which were, let's say, like, their loyalty program. I thought these people were going to be sort of like these evil villains that were, like, shunning the sort of, like, world cruisers or whatever. But in reality, it turned out to be Royal Caribbean that was the villain and was, like, doing weird shit that I was like. So when I started talking about that, and it was overshadowing, because honestly, I'll be real, like, and I will toot my own horn. That was, like, I think one of the most successful marketing campaigns, because it was a brand deal. The whole thing was a brand deal slash series. It was for Atria Books of 2024. But the best part about it was, because I went on the exact leg that I did, it lined up with the exact week that they were launching the largest cruise ship in the world, Icon of the Seas. Every single headline was just like, TikToker miserable on 9-month cruise, like, Royal Caribbean taking heat from miserable, like, from TikToker who says blah blah blah, like, and every single headline. And then it would be at the bottom, they also just launched Icon of the Seas, blah, blah. So all the press about Icon of the Seas was revolving around how miserable I was on this cruise. And I was like, well, I mean, sucks for you guys, I guess. But it really showed me how I could, one, manipulate headlines to be like, so, you know, a lot of the stuff that, like, was going on, yes, of course, like, it was all happening, but I had to string together a narrative of, you know, my 18 days that I was on board there. And I knew that I had a lot of the attention of the press. Like, the New York Times wrote a hit piece against my content and the cruise. And I was like,
wow,
this is fucking cut. Like,
what was the worst thing that Royal Caribbean, you would say, like, what was the heat that Royal Caribbean absolutely deserved? What was the reason they deserved that heat?
Because they, like, there was a time where they did a ceremony for Employee of the Month, right? I want to let you know that Royal Caribbean is worth $33 billion. Okay. They are worth $33 billion. They did a ceremony. This is the first time they've ever had a ceremony out in the public. Because it was a 9-month cruise, they wanted, you know, they knew that these employees were going to become family to these, you know, the room attendants, the waiters, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so they had it for the Pinnacle members where they, like, showcase, here's who the nominees are and here's who won. And in the back of, there were only two women nominated and they were both in the back of house category. And the two women won. They won together. It was a tie. And the prize for each of the people who won Employee of the Month was $500. And they made the two girl employees split the $500. And I went, are you fucking crazy? What do you mean you made them, these people? And then they're like, they justify it with, like, oh, well, you know, $250 is a lot in their country.
Oh,
and
I'm like, no.
Okay, that's like that's like justifying slave wages. Like, what do you mean? It's a lot in their country. It's I you will never hear me talking positively about the cruise industry and how they do not pay their workers adequately. But whatever. That was one of the things I think that they really deserved heat on. Also, the boat was disgusting. It was from 2003. It was so dated. And, like, but I felt bad talking negatively about this cruise because I was starting to get to know a lot of the people on the cruise who had spent so much money to, like, be on there. And although, like, you know, I had to check my privilege sort of towards the end because I was like, I'm very lucky. I got to travel the world, you know, a lot with modeling and with work. But, like, these people really, it meant a lot to them to get to go travel the world. And I wanted them to have that. But I think because I made such, like, a hullabaloo about a lot of the stuff on the cruise, a lot of things changed. And they saw that if they started making noise, they could also get things changed. And I think that's when they started to realize, the power that, like, social media had on that cruise, not just to, like, make them famous, but also to get, like, actual change happening on the ship, because it was such, like, a microcosm of, like, individual personalities. And the people who are not the influencers hated me. They were banging on my door at 4 a.m., running away, playing Ding Dong Ditch. They were like laughing at me in cafeterias. And I'm just sitting there going, "This, you guys don't understand how good this content is. Like, you guys are just adding layers of villainous energy that I could." It was amazing.
So you were like, the question is, am I the drama? No, the answer is you are the drama.
Is I always was the drama.
Did you at least, it doesn't sound very horny, but did you at least have like one boat
man? Are you insane? Not even remote. The median age there was 58. That was the median age. There was
baby. I fuck 58.
And I would fuck 58 too if they were fucking hot, but they were not. These were like cruisers. And let me tell you something. It was during the election year, and they are not so liberal, the cruisers over there. Not even remotely. Also, under that lighting, I would not let anyone touch me. Like that overhead lighting, that boat. Oh God. Mm-mm. And in the carpeting room.
I have a fucking fantasy. You know, one day, actually, we should do a reunion episode where one day I get to have the privilege. I'll tell you that I got booked to do either my show or whatever on a gay cruise. And then we will come back and
my worst nightmare.
Wait, tell me why it's your worst nightmare.
At every single like gay rave that like I go to with my friends, the best part about it is being able to leave.
If you're
on a fucking gay cruise, you can't leave.
But see, I'm not going for gay rave cruise. I'm going for like buffet cruise, furtive glances at the pool cruise.
You're doing Four Seasons cruising. You're doing scenic cruising. You're not doing.
So, I mean, there was a cruise that a friend works for a cruise line that they were. I couldn't make it happen, but they had like. So well, I did not go on it, but they did have like a obviously the parties, but then there was also like a cruisy like. I guess play space. I don't know what you would call it, but it was like
with the employees.
Well, I think it was just like a designated like play area for the guests, and
because the employees be fucking straight up like
each other though, not the guests.
No, they are not allowed to fuck the guests.
That's what I hear.
But they be fucking having like orgies in their rooms with like four twin beds.
Oh yeah, no, I know plenty of like musical theater queens who did Cats on fucking Carnival and. And Mr. Mistopheles is getting dicked down by...
Mistopheles, don't bring him into this. I'm dying.
Who's going to dick down Mr. Mistopheles in this metaphor? Rum Tum Tugger, of course. Of course, Rum Tum Tugger is dicking down Mr. Mistopheles. But listen, I would love to talk to you about boat fucking for hours. And yet I do need to get into the final podcast question, which is, Mark Sebastian, if the world was ending... You could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
Lindsay Lohan. And I know that Lindsay Lohan, if you're going to say that Lindsay Lohan's not a character actress, I'd like you to say that to Elizabeth Taylor's face. Okay? Because
Elizabeth Taylor? Lindsay Lohan, what does she have to say about Lindsay Lohan?
She played Elizabeth Taylor in the movie I Am Dick. You've never seen that?
Lindsay Lohan played Elizabeth Taylor in what?
Yeah, I Am Dick or I Love Dick?
Oh my God, Liz and Dick.
Liz and Dick, thank you very much.
I completely blacked this out. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. The requirements for you saying like who I would save was that they were over 40. She's 38, okay? But she looks 22 now, thank you very much. And she had to have worn a wig at least once. And she is definitely wearing a wig in that. Lindsay Lohan is a hometown hero, Long Island girl. She defined culture. I could say like Lady Gaga or Cher or like there are tons of other people, but Lindsay Lohan for me, I would say without a doubt. I have a lot of insane Lindsay Lohan lore of like stories that I've had with her. Thank you very fucking much.
For people watching on YouTube, I just pulled up the Liz and Dick Wikipedia page showing Lindsay Lohan in her Elizabeth Taylor wig. Glamorous, infamous, scandalous.
The whole movie is just her like gasping, throwing drinks at walls and fainting. Like that's the whole movie. That's and it's every season when she goes and then faints. But then she wakes up to throw something at the wall and then it's seen. She's incredible.
I at first was going to push against the character actress nomenclature. However, you've made your point and you've made it well. And Lindsay Lohan is a character actress.
Also, she's had not one, but two movies where she's had a twin that she didn't know about. And if you're going to say, wait, what's the other one? You really should look up I Know Who Killed Me and go watch that piece of iconic filmography. I mean, it's amazing. Also, not to mention she was in the Canyons with famed porn star James Dean.
Famously.
And let's not even get into her holiday romances on Netflix. She is a star, and is she an incredible actress?
You know,
suddenly I go silent. It doesn't matter.
Your sound's cutting out. Yeah. I think that actually when I saw Mean Girls, I really felt like she anchored the film. And I do think that we have witnessed Lindsay Lohan.
Georgia Rule? Hello.
Hello. Oh, what about she's acting against. Yeah, exactly. Lindsay Lohan has such a crazy like life arc that has translated to her filmography. The fact that we got the gay meme of her and her resort in Greece. That's how you party Mykonos. Like the fact that she can give us that and then Parent Trap and then Mean Girls and then Herbie Unloaded.
Fully Loaded.
Fully Loaded. My God bless him.
Fully Loaded.
I'm so sorry for unloading Herbie.
I hope that she's on prep. I hope that Herbie was on prep the whole time, because if she's taking all those loads.
Herbie Fully Undetectable. I just shout out Lindsay for being able to be a child actress who has actually A, survived, and B, gotten back into the game. And you know what? I don't know what the plastic surgery is or whatever, but she's looking.
She's reverse age. She's Benjamin Button.
She's Benjamin Buttoned, and that is a character actress who can change her face on camera and off, give us gay meme, give us wig, and give us Mark Sebastian on a podcast giving us a TED Talk.
Exactly. She looks more like Lindsay Lohan now than she did when she was Lindsay Lohan like 2008.
The fact that we both live in LA now and we can talk about how like the era of plastic surgery that we are living in is kind of scary. We'll end in a second, but the Kris Kardashian facelift has radicalized me. I mean, just the fact that this woman is however old she is, and I'm now, my TikTok is all people getting neck lifts, and like, I'm just like, some people, I do think that aging naturally is how I'm going to go out. I think I think that's how it's going to go. But I marvel at what science and medicine can do these days to people like Lindsay, to people like Chris.
I'm down for anyone. If they want to get work done, do it.
Babe. Oh, yeah.
I'm like Jocelyn Wildenstein the shit out of it. Like, I'm here for people who look like that. And I'm also here for anyone who wants to age beautifully. I'm just like, I think the gays collectively in LA need to understand that. I just don't think that do whatever you want. It's your body, right? Your body, your choice.
Sure.
Until it comes to Juvederm and you're putting too much of it in your lip. And I'm like, I just don't, you look so much. It's like, no, babe, don't pump your lip up. You look so hot without you looking like a sort of puffer fish. It's you're allergic to shellfish.
Oh, I agree.
If that's how they want to look, like if that's what their beauty ideal, like what a.
Who are we to judge?
Yeah.
Who are we to change their Juvedermy, their Juva journey?
Their Juva journey. Exactly.
Well, Mark Sebastian, I have had such a delicious gay ass time. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. The minutes have gone by so fast. Can you tell the listeners, if you don't mind, where they can follow you? And if there's anything you would like to plug?
You can follow me at Mark Sebastian F, Mark with a C. Thank you for asking. Mark with a C on TikTok, and then on Instagram. And then there's also, YouTube is starting. I've gotten to the point now where I'm like starting to syndicate everything onto other channels. But I'm excited to do season 2 of A Great American Gay Side Quest, which will be coming soon and will be announced, I hope, soon. But yeah, you can go follow that stuff. And I think that what is really important is Lindsay Lohan does have new movies coming out, and I need you guys to go support our girl. Netflix needs those streams.
Shout out to Lindsay Lohan's
But thank you so much for having me.
And Mark, it was truly my honor. Thank you to Angela for introducing me to you, Mark Sebastian. And
thank you, Angela.
I will see you at the flower shop for our next hang, okay?
I would absolutely love that. I'll see you there.
Thanks for joining me this week on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this interview with the gorgeous Mark Sebastian, let me know in the comments on YouTube or make a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. to let me know you are here and you are queer. If you would like more bonus gay ass content, there's a very delicious episode on Substack this week for our bonus ep with Charlie Covey. You might follow him on TikTok as well. He's a fitness instructor in Denver, incredibly hot, and is just like me. He overshares. That is at substack.com/@EricWills. It's also linked in all the description stuff, so you can easily click there to join for only $5 a month. And there's a lot more bonus episodes there where that came from. Thank you all so much for being here. And also thank you for coming to my sold out solo show in New York City. What a beautiful gift that I get to stop promoting it. It really was just like kind of a gorgeous homecoming back to New York. And I am currently working on future dates in future cities. So stay tuned for that. And as always, do me a really, really big favor and stay gay.
Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.